Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
Hello, I'm Roger Watterson with the ninth in our series of programmes in which we meet the candidates in the 2011 general election. Today, Mooloin Santon comes under the spotlight where three candidates are contesting the one seat in the House of Keys. They are Graeme Cregeen, the former postman and retired MHK for the constituency, former hotelier and businessman John Hanson, and Gareth Kelly, a self-employed businessman and blacksmith. During the next hour, we shall be exploring their political ideas and philosophy, but before that, let's take a trip round the constituency with John Moss.
In retail terms, we know what M&S is, and some of us may know what S&M is. But in political terms, M&S is Mooloin Santon, and it's only been in existence since 1986, when the ministerial system, of course, burst over the top of us. There was a lot of rejigging over the century amongst the constituencies. Now, pay attention at the back there, I'll be as quick as I can. Originally, the Sheedings of Ayr, Glenfaber, Glenfarber, Garth, Michael Rushton and Middle returned three members each. Douglas, the town, had three members, and one apiece for Castletown, Peel and Ramsey. In 1893, Garth had a member removed, and with that member, Douglas was split into Douglas North and South. Ramsey got another member in 1956, and Mooloin Santon came into being 30 years later. Now, it's unusual in a number of ways. It's split into two. The bulk of it, of course, lies on the north side of Castletown, and then on the south side of Castletown, there's the nugget of scarlet. The parish is bordered on the east by Santon Burn, on the north by the Granite Mountain, which is the northern bit of Stony Mountain, and South Barul, and by an irregular line from South Barul to Pool Vache on the west. And, of course, by the sea on the south. It's about 15 square miles, and candidates will be familiar with many of those miles and yards and inches and doorknobs. Luckily, most of the parish, we're told, is low and undulating. The name Santon comes from an Irish saint. It's been spelt a number of ways. I'm told that when the Isle of Man Railway was built from Douglas, a sign writer left Douglas to paint the station signboards. He wrote Santon, S-A-N-T-O-N, and some say that was the start of the modern spelling of the saint's name. Incidentally, the local vicar's stipend in the 17th century in Santon was so small, one of them kept an alehouse. Locally, there's a strong pressure group in Ballasalla, Badra, Ballasalla and District Residents Association, who keep the MHK on his toes. And with the current developments inside Ballasalla, the possibility of a ring road, the southern area plan, there's much in the way of planning to debate, with the popularity of the south, with residents putting it under pressure for more housing. The airport, of course, falls inside its boundaries. The Castletown Golf Links Hotel, once the Blue Riband Hotel in the south, now, well, what is its future? Also in Mooloin Santon, that footpath. Now, some people say that the Peninsular War is being fought out in this seat. All we know is it's called the Langness Dispute. This, of course, this constituency, was the seat of Donald Gelling, MHK, from 1986, elected unopposed twice and then recalled to the chief ministerial colours when Richard Corkill resigned. Mr Gelling still takes a keen interest in the constituency and would be there for advice, if required, from the incumbent. So there we have it, the battlefield of Mooloin Santon for September the 29th. The gloves are off. Let's to it, gentlemen.
That was John Moss. At the beginning of all the constituency programmes, we invite the candidates to speak to us for a maximum of 2 minutes without interruption on a topic of their choice, and this we do in alphabetical order. First then to our three gentlemen of the day, and it's Graeme Cregeen.
Good evening. I was born and brought up in the Isle of Man. I'm married to Jackie and have two children, Andrew 15 and Ben 12, who I would like to thank for their continued support and understanding. In 2006, the people of Mooloin Santon did me the great honour and elected me to serve them. In 2006, I thought we would have a difficult time ahead of us. I do not think anybody would have thought we would see a world banking crisis and economic turmoil. The island is not immune to the present turbulence in the world of financial markets. In comparison to many larger countries, the island has fared better, with continued growth, low unemployment and low crime rates. The challenge is to protect what we have. I believe the people of the island will need experience and expertise to guide the Isle of Man through the present and the future unsettled times, attributes that I have ably demonstrated over the last 5 years. I have learnt a lot over this period and have always tried to identify areas of poor value for money and waste. For example, I brought forward and worked on a committee to look at government properties and maintenance. As a result, it is estimated to make a saving of around £8 million. I have been one of the most successful members of the House of Keys to bring private members' motions through Timbrel Select Committees, such as the Poacher's Pocket, Review into Planning, Crossock Farm, TV licence, and into petitions of doliance. And I would like to thank all of those who helped and supported me. I have always responded to constituents' requests for help and have always made myself available. It is easy to find fault, it is harder to find solutions. If I identify a problem, I always try and put forward a solution.
Thank you. Right, from Graham Crezine, we now turn to John Hanson.
Hello, I am John Hanson. Before I start, I would like to mention I am holding an informal tea and talk in the Village Hall, Ballasalla, between 1 and 5pm on Friday the 23rd of September. Now, I have worked on the island as a self-employed businessman for over 30 years and have gained a vast experience of running concurrently a number of successful businesses. And I believe the previous government, both at local and national level, has let the residents of the island down in a way never experienced before. For example, at local level, Ballasalla was promised a much-needed bypass, which should have been in place, quote, by 2011, but has yet to make it to the planning stage, and now seems as remote as ever. Sandton has been totally neglected. The condition of the roads is appalling, particularly the stretch of A5 between the Blackboards and Ballahowan, where the undulating surface, together with the lack of pavements and signs alerting drivers of pedestrians in the road, make this a seriously dangerous area. In my opinion, the most dangerous stretch of major main road on the island, described recently by a Deemster as a country lane. At national level, the absolute errors of judgment from the previous administration that have put every man, woman and child into the dire straits we are facing today have been well aired and should by now be understood by everyone unless living on cloud nine. The situation should have been addressed and the measures implemented to bring our expenditure in line with our income to deal with the devastating fallout. This wasn't done, so consequently, the next government faces the toughest of jobs to avoid bankruptcy of our island.
Right, John, thank you for that. And now we go on to our next candidate here. Following John Hanson is Gareth Kelly.
Hello. As you may know, I'm Gareth Kelly and I'm 29 years young. I've had 10 years working for myself in one way or another. I've diversified my company's activities as and when I see an opening in a market, and we have about 5 different areas that we work on, all very different from the next, which shows that I have the dynamics of vision and the ability to take different routes as the island and its people change. I would bring to government a young new look, someone that can do work on a local and national level, somebody that looks at all the facts and makes a case of the facts and not hearsay, the ability to see what the effects of a decision will be to the island in 5 to 10 years' time before making that choice, so bringing a long-term solution to a short-term problems. It is time the Isle of Man government has strong people who are willing to make hard choices. This has been lacking in the past 5 years. The present members of government have buried their heads in the sand and have not addressed the problems we face. They have increased the problems we have. They have bloated the government workers' numbers and have spent excess amounts of money on projects. And now we are in a situation where we will have to make difficult decisions. This could have all been avoided when the last government was voted in. The problem the public face now are the direct responsibility of the past government you voted in. I will strong but fair, and as you may have read on my website or will see from my manifesto, I'm a straight-talking person who will do what is right for the island and its people. I would like to start a rent-to-buy scheme because the current first-time buy scheme is not doing enough. To actively approach companies in the UK to be more direct in bringing them over to the island, we need to look at not why they come, but as to why they do not. There are hundreds of companies that could relocate. We need to find out why they don't. To bring a new level of care for the elderly in their homes, one that makes them feel that they are not a hindrance to the people on the island, to take away that feeling of helplessness that they get when they have to ask for help. To review and make changes to paying conditions for government workers, we have a pension black hole of around 2 billion. This needs to be addressed now and not later, before it's too late. to reduce the scope of government by looking at the services we can lease out to private companies, to reduce the work focused, controlled, manageable manner, as so not to impact the island too drastically.
Right, thank you, Gareth. Right, everybody's had their 2 minutes now, and that was Gareth Kelly. He was the last to speak of the three. Now, policies and priorities, politics and philosophy and more, all now under discussion with the three candidates for Malou and Senton. And, Graham, you say in your manifesto that you have been, in the past 5 years, vocal in expressing the constituents' concerns.
Yes.
Right. So to what effect has that happened? I mean, you list quite a number in your manifesto. Well, expressing this one thing, doing something about it is another. How effective do you think you've been?
Well, I think if you look at my past record, one of the first ones was the poacher's pocket, which was a major issue 5 years ago regarding all the planning and the decisions made by the Director of Planning. To that, I got the support of Tynwald to have a select committee to look into this, which came through with recommendations. And one of the recommendations was that the Director of Planning was to have his powers reduced. Crossog Farm was another one I was instrumental in. They were going to hand over government land to a developer without having any recourse to get the land back. I had a select committee look into that, and until the committee reported, they hadn't even taken that option off the builder that he couldn't have the land, so we had to go and do that. So we've had the issues on Langness, Mary Veg with the smell from Iris. I worked with David Quirk, who was a member of the department at the time, and over the last 2 to 3 years, we've had very few complaints regarding that. I was the only member to actually get a written undertaking from the Department of Transport that they would never spread sewage on the land again.
Right, so we're dealing here, you're illustrating quite a number of constituency and local issues here, in fact. We'll come to the national ones maybe a bit later. But, John Hanson, you say in your manifesto that like-minded residents, this is the reason you're standing, who are disillusioned and upset with the general direction of life. Well, that would almost contradict what Graham's saying, because he seems to be indicating some success here.
Well, I'd say it does contradict him. And for one, Mary Beck, I will tell you now, on the Oatlands Road and up at the top of Kroger, it absolutely stinks. Now, if it's been raining, it's unbearable, but on a summer's day, it can still smell.
What you'll find with Kroger is that that's the last in the line of the vent pipes to actually be dealt with. And they've dealt all the way from Port St Mary through Ronald's Way, all the way up through. And with any scheme of work, there's a start point and a finish point.
That's fine. That's a specific item with your manifesto specifically says general direction of life.
Yep. And the general direction. People are disillusioned. That they've phoned you up asking you to attend certain concerns that they've had, in particular Pound Road last...
I would challenge you on that deeply, because one of the things that I did was I got the department out to that and I saw you there.
I actually dealt with it. 5 days after you were called out. 5 days.
That was you, but I saw Mr and Mrs Dawson. I spoke to them on numerous occasions and we actually got it. You never phoned me.
I didn't actually call you out at any time. It was Pete Murray that called you out.
Well, look, that's not...
That was dealt with. And the people up there...
Gentlemen, please. I think we should stop bringing other people into this just at the moment, you know, other people's names, because we're here to deal with issues today. And I'd like to come back, because I really want to bring in Gareth in a minute, but I'd still like to pursue you, John, on the bit about... We're talking about issues here now, but you're talking about upset with, and you say more than just the general way of life. You've gone a bit further to say the general direction of life on this beautiful island.
Yes.
So it's definitely more than just the local stuff you're talking about. So give me an example of why they are disillusioned and upset.
The previous government effectively had its head in the sand. Now, there were warnings as far back as 2006 that problems were arising in the banking sector. Robert Peston on the BBC recommended that people should diversify their savings into a number of accounts because there were worries about a bank going down. Now, I was one of the people that carried that suggestion out, from having all my funds in one bank, split them among several. Unfortunately, I got caught with the Corflinger Bank because I chose that as one. Now, I'll bring that up later, but I have issues there. The way the Financial Supervision Commission here on the island, all I could get hold of was an answer phone.
Right. So this bit about general direction of life, though, I mean, the recent survey, Hugh Davidson's survey that's been published later, says that actually the vast majority of people are happy.
I know that, yeah, they do. There's no doubt about that. And generally, life here, we are happy. But the way it's going, the fact that we are living above our means, we're well aware we're living above our means, that but our finance minister's telling us we achieved, she achieved, a zero balance on last year's accounts. Well, that was creative accounting, as far as I can see, because there was no money being put back into the capital accounts. So no interest payments made. And we are being effective. I feel we are being lied to. And other people do, that I speak to around the streets, and when I'm out walking,
it's a strong
accusation,
that,
you know. Dogs. Yeah, well, maybe it is, but that's
getting
how...
Getting things wrong or misrepresenting them may be one thing, but lied is a strong one. What do you think then, Gareth? I mean, you're listening to these two gentlemen here now. Well, I mean, do you think that, for instance, number one, there's two issues there. One is the constituency issue, the management of the constituency by Graham here, and the second is the people in the island. Are they happy? Are they unhappy? Do you think they're disillusioned?
I think they are a bit, and I think what John's trying to say is that government have created this place where they have employed a lot of people where they might not have needed to. So they've created a false economy, so to speak, and with the VAT and the repayments that we're not going to get anymore, is that lifestyle is going to end, and it's going to put a lot of lives in jeopardy. If 5 years ago they had trimmed their budget and started to think about what could come, then we might be in a better position. I've got figures here that in 2006 we had 304 staff employed at the 50 to 100k range. That, and now in 2010, is 728. That's an increase of 400 people. What are them people doing? They're not on the ground. They're in managerial roles. So why do we need 400 more people to do jobs now that we didn't need in 2006? And that's 31 million, roughly, if you average it.
So how far back have you gone there?
That's 2006 from the last election.
Right, OK. So there's a question then, Graham. Where have all these people come from during your term of office?
Well, it's one of the areas that I've been concerned about. And when you're looking at consultants and people being redeployed, I think it would be over a year ago I asked the question regarding staffing. And in the hospital, it turned out that 99 additional managers had been employed, and they were going to cut these out because it was an area that they'd found that needed to be addressed. How they actually get along there, I don't know, because when you're not in a department who has got those staff, it is very difficult, because it all goes through the Civil Service Commission, and politicians are there to make policies. They are not there as a management role to give people promotions.
You can keep the pressure on by asking questions, though.
And I have, over my 5 years, I've probably put more questions down regarding the cost of consultants, trying to bring consultants down. I was a big critic of the corporate leadership group, which was brought in the October, November of 2006, which gave a number of these civil servants big pay rises for doing the same jobs. Now, I was on the Public Accounts Committee, which actually looked into that, and it was a deal that was done when there was no members who was in position.
That's the question, is it? You were on the Public Accounts Committee and you looked into it. Yes. That's a phrase almost like there's a hole in the road and we're looking into it, isn't it? Because what happens after the Public Accounts Committee reports then? Is it just a pious exercise, or is there any positive outcome?
No, what happened was the Public Accounts Committee went and brought its recommendations to Tynwald. And what usually happens is that it's debated. And I think I remember that the Council of Ministers got an amendment through, which sort of tamed down what we were trying to achieve. But what you're looking at is, the Public Accounts Committee makes recommendations. It is a democracy where you can vote one way, but if the majority of the people vote against it, it's lost.
Well, but, Gareth, but if you were elected then, how would... Just let me find out from Gareth a minute, because, Gareth, you often say that you would, in your manifesto, there's a variety of things, if people elected you, you would do. And you've highlighted making a reduction in the scope of government. Yeah. And how would you do that then? Graham's just telling you that the system actually almost works against you doing that. What would you do that was any different to what he did?
Well, maybe we need to change government. Maybe we need to change the way it is.
Well, how would you do it?
How would I do it?
Mm.
Well, obviously, you'd have to get all the MHKs in to do it. You can't just do it on your own. But if the MHKs can't do their job, what you're saying that they can't, then...
No, I didn't say they can't. There's you can push your way forward. And like I said earlier,
well,
I've been one of the most successful members to bring stuff through with the assistance.
Yes, but...
But there is... If you have the Council of Ministers who decide to go away forward, that is 10 votes.
Yeah, I know all know about the block vote. But coming back to the public committees, in 2006, you said in your manifesto that somebody on the public committee should not be in a department, but you took a department and a committee membership in 2006.
Well,
you've gone back on your words in your manifesto.
No, my manifesto said, and if you read it properly...
Well, I have read it properly.
I don't think you have, because what it said is, I believe that members of the Public Accounts Committee should not be in a department.
You believe. Now, there you go. So that's a statement that you believe.
No, if you listen to me, what it means is that you are put on committees by Tynwald.
Yes.
So Tynwald puts you on there so you can say, I don't want to go on it, but if Tynwald puts you on that committee, you are on it and it is your duty to serve on that committee.
Well, you can resign from the department then. If you said in your mind for you believe, then if you believe that much... then you should have resigned from your department that you're in.
Why should you resign? Because I can
because
do...
Because you said it.
No, I didn't say
said,
I would not
you,
serve on
you
two.
Said,
what I
no,
said.
You didn't say that, but you said you believe.
Excuse me.
Sorry, John. Carry on, John.
what Roger was saying about how would you change it. Mm. Now, I'm starting to believe that party politics might be the way forward on the island in future. This is a lovely system where we're all independents, but we... tends to be that we're headless chickens. As you say, there's little you can do against the Council of Ministers.
You work with others, but then you are going from one block vote as a party to another block vote. So if a party gets in, that actually nullifies the rest of the members in there.
Well, that's
so
where government
it doesn't
has to change.
It doesn't really matter.
The block vote has to be taken away. They have to reduce the members. Tony Brown did do very well in keeping his people on his side by creating this block vote where they had so many members.
Before Tony Brown.
No, but he's used it more than anyone else. And there should be a point where there's so many, so it's equal. So there is an equal vote. So the people sat on the sideline can push it away.
Are you aware they can actually say that they've got a position already, so you can declare that you've got a position. Can I ask you a question? Yeah.
Universally, across the island, the residents are of the opinion the last government is the worst government in living record. Do you agree with that or disagree with that?
What you have is you have a number of people in there that I would say have not worked very well. Mm. Now, I know the hours that I put in this job, and what I said in 2006 was that I would be a full-time MHK, that I would dedicate all my time to that, that I wouldn't be a director of companies, that I wouldn't have other businesses, because I knew the amount of time that I would have to put in there. So I know my position.
I know you've been true to your word on that front. I'm not disputing that. But you are also what I would consider a committee man. You've sat on a lot of committees. The last one with the BBC, for instance, that was 18 months, We're not really at a total conclusion as yet, are we, on that? It is totally wound up. We've not got to go back to them.
That's it. It's done. Yep. If you would have read the... Have you read the report?
No, I haven't, I'm sorry. But we're finished with it, are we?
It's now gone off to...
And what's the value of that to
£1 million that the BBC should be invested in the Isle of Man.
I would like to find out from the two of you, I mean, not from Graham, it's because you refer to the worst government. I think you're talking to a degree of perception there, because there's also been some successes in the past 5 years as well. I think you have to allow for that.
Well, I can't draw too many to mind, can you?
There has been successes in the way that we've had new companies come in, the ship registry, the space industry, and things like that. They have done well to bring new companies in here to diversify the economy and keep things going. But the underlying problem is, it's not the economy in that scale, the private economy, it's the government's economy and of how they have amalgamated this many people in their jobs and just spending and spending and spending. That is the point of this. If the government in 2006 had sat down and gone, because they had forewarned knowledge about the VAT, but if they'd done something then and maybe not spent so much, put it in the reserves, they could have built something now when the construction industry needs it, because they will have put the money away in the good times and spent it in the bad times.
How much are the reserves at the moment?
Which, the cash or the actual in stock?
Cash reserves.
I think cash reserves is around 300 million. The actual reserves is 1.5 billion, is it?
What's the cash reserves, Graham? Do you know?
I think it's about 600 million because you've got the National Insurance Fund.
Well, you don't want to be touching
that.
So that's not cash reserve because you don't want to touch that.
I'm sorry, but you've got to realise that what you're looking at is you've got your National Insurance Fund, which is round about 500-600 million.
Which they still like to pay for the hospital.
Which is, exactly. But if you remember when that must be, 10, 15 years ago?
Yeah.
So you can't blame this administration for doing that.
I didn't say that, but I'm just saying that.
And the other one is that you're saying in the last 5 years, the Isle of Man government should have actually been saving some of that money in the last 10 to 15 years.
Maybe.
Not maybe, they definitely should. The Isle of Man economy
so
has...
Why haven't you in this last 5 years, then?
If you notice, the things that I've actually been doing has actually been doing that.
Well, of course, with cash, a lot of the cash that we stock up is for capital projects. It keeps the building industry going, it provides essential public infrastructure and so on. I find it intriguing in your manifesto, John, that you said that you would want the future capital programmes to be analysed far more carefully.
Yes.
That bit I understand, but I don't understand the bit about offering a referendum system to the public on capital expenditure.
For instance, the Richmond Hill project. I don't think there was anybody in favour of that. It essentially wasn't needed.
According to the department, they were slipping down the hill.
There were black spots with the hill, mainly due to speeding. Surely the instigation of a speed camera could have dealt with that and created revenue for the police.
So how would this referendum work?
How would it work? I'd envisage trying to work it along the same lines as the Swiss operate theirs. They have a division of... three sections of government. You have to arrange a certain number of signatures within 100 days. If you achieve that, it can then go forward and it has to be debated by government. Now, that can be at local or national level.
But that's not a referendum, it's a petition.
Well, you can call it... They call it referendum in Switzerland.
So referendum is where you go out to vote, almost like an election to the public.
Yeah.
And Richmond Hill
at that
was
point,
debated.
Sorry, after the signatures, at that point, it has to be put to the national vote or the local vote.
But what about the cost of that? Referenda are extremely expensive to implement.
Well, yes, they could be, but I was envisaging that that could be incorporated on a biannual basis... along with the electoral register to reduce that the cost of that.
That would delay issues almost interminably, wouldn't it?
I don't see why it should.
So a two-yearly gap, and then you go out to the pub. So any schemes about £1 million, you could actually go to a referendum.
Well, whether it would be £1 million, in this case, the one I'm talking about is £3 million.
Well, even at £3 million, but capital schemes which go to Tynwald... And the Richmond Hill did go to Tynwald and it was voted and I vigorously voted against that and spoke against it because I actually think it's probably more dangerous now than it was before.
Well, I'll agree with you.
Now, one of the things you have is that when you have capital projects going to Tynwald, if you were to have your system, I would think that you would be delaying everything because, say, for instance, you've got a scheme up at the Jerby surgery or you've got... a new piece of equipment to go in at, like the pumps for Mary Veg, you would have to go out, could actually have to go out to referendum on that. And when you have a scheme that comes forward and it has a definite lead-in date, if you're saying it's going to be 2 years, if you have to wait, if you just had
I can appreciate where you're coming from, Graham, but the treatment plant in itself, surely that's a prime example. It's not performed as it was meant to perform. No.
But, you know, that's after the event. We're talking about in referendum before the event.
Yeah, I know it is. I'm not blaming the previous government.
Well, let's not get caught up in minutiae here, because the issue really is that you have got a basically sound principle here, and that is you want major capital decisions to be subject to a public referendum.
No, possibly. If there is concern over it, if enough signatures...
How do you know if they're concerned about it?
How? Because people will talk to each other and raise issues, and then if there's a possibility of it, they can collect whatever amount of signatures and would be decided.
It'd be easy enough to get 100 signatures on any project.
You might go above 100. In Switzerland, I think it's 10,000. Right. Obviously, you can't use those figures on the Isle of Man, because we've only got a population of, what is it, 82,000?
Well, look, now, at this point in our discussion, we're going to take a short commercial break. Just join us in 2 minutes, please.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
Our constituency programme for the 2011 general election today features Malouin Santon and the three candidates, Gareth Kelly, John Hanson and Graham Trugene. Now, Gareth, your manifesto has one or two interesting items in it for me, and if I just touch on two of them. One is that you are talking about helping people into work and helping companies to employ people,
yeah,
particularly young people, like in the NEETS variety.
Yeah.
Now, that's an admirable ambition, I suggest, but how do you propose to do it by reducing the national insurance contributions?
I think you may have got that on separate. They're two separate things. The NEETS and the National Insurance is two different sections.
Well, it was in your section about encouraging employment.
Yeah, encouraging employment. That is from bring new companies over. We've got to offer companies in the UK reasons to come here. Obviously, tax is one of them. Land to build on or to lease off us to build their own units. The other way we can bring them in is to give them 3 years reduction in national insurance. The government are going to have to reduce their numbers. There is no way about that. So if we can get companies to come in and take up the slack of the government employers we're reducing, that is going to save us a lot of money on, instead of paying them dole money, basically. If it gives that company a start to get into the island, then that could well be something that is good for the island. It's something different, something new. We have to look at all options, whether it's a reduction in our national insurance or not.
Our arrangements, for instance, with the United Kingdom on the NI reciprocal arrangement there, allow us to do this?
With which arrangements, sorry?
To reduce the NI contributions.
I don't know, to be honest.
I do that, Graham?
But it's something to look into.
I think one of the things that Gareth's got to be very careful on is that trying to encourage companies to come over here and reducing their NI, how do you think that would affect local companies who may be already providing those services?
You would have to look into it differently. Obviously, if you've got one company here and you're bringing in one that is dealing exactly like it, you're going to give an unfair advantage. But you can always mix and match it. It doesn't have to be about national insurance. That was just the way you could give them the grant instead of the national insurance. There's ways around it that we wouldn't fall foul of a reciprocal agreement with the UK. We could work out the national insurance and pay them back in a grant. There is ways around it.
But that's still a problem, because you're now giving them a grant to compete with local companies.
As long as they're not in direct competition with them. There's lots of areas where they're not for the markets in the island.
Gareth.
That they're everywhere else in the UK and the world.
Can I just throw a spoke in the...
That's fine.
Listen, on the island here, we've got an unlevel playing field, because any company that you encourage to come in here, they then have to import all the raw materials into the Isle of Man.
Yes.
And then export the finished product.
Manufacturing.
Yeah, manufacturing, yeah. Which is what you're talking about.
Well, it doesn't have to be manufacturing. It can be a broad range of companies. It doesn't have to be one.
To offer them an incentive up front, I'd suggest possibly it would... We'd end up just losing money from the national insurance.
Isn't that the way that it was done in the days of the industry board, if we go back a long way back, and was found wanting?
It was. There was companies that set up at Ronald's Way, and they got huge grants to get all the machinery, and then as soon as they got the machinery, the company went to the wall, and they took the stuff with them.
I think
so
we've
just
got to try and avoid grants and so forth. We've got Alan Bell and the... DED department.
But they do offer grants for them to come in here. They do offer leases for land already.
That's true.
So that you're actually saying that doesn't work, but that's what we do already. But we need to expand on it. We need to give them different ways.
I think we've got to look at the core industries we've got here and see if we can revive these. And there's many that we can't. Farming, for one. We were all at the meeting at Agriculture House the other night. And I thought that idea of the flour mill incorporating that into tourism was an excellent idea. That's what I thought anyway. But we've got farming. The island should be capable of being self-sufficient. It can't be far off.
Farming's not going to give a big increase in numbers of jobs.
Well, no, it's not.
And that's the problem we're going to have.
Towards the GDP now, it's down to what? Is it 1%?
It's less than that.
How the new VAT arrangement works is that the more money that we can generate on the Isle of Man means that the more money that we can get back through the VAT agreement.
Yes.
So we grow the Isle of Man, which means that we actually get more back through the VAT.
Well, that's what I'm just saying, that we need more companies to grow the island.
They might be back again for more money.
They might be back.
Let's remember, the UK is cash strapped.
Yes, and I think one of the areas that we have to do is, and I was on looking at medical devices. Now, medical is one of the last areas to actually be cut in any recession. It's always a growth area. And I've spoken to people in the industry who have got businesses out in China who are keen to come over to the Isle of Man because they can manufacture it cheap in China, ship it over here, and it's a high-value, low-volume industry. Now, these sort of areas is what we should be looking at. And it's taken about 2.5 years of talking through this with economic development and the DTI to actually get them to realise that this is a good idea, that they're now actually employing somebody to actively go out and look at these industries. And the good thing about this industry is it's more diverse for the Isle of Man. It gives students who have gone to university and our younger people a very good opportunity to go out there and get high qualification and well-paid jobs in these industries, which will be a benefit to the Isle of Man. These are the areas that we should be looking at.
Well, of course, all of you have covered, some of you covered the same subjects in a different way in your manifestos. John, for instance, you have one which I found, the wording was interesting. You said, guide the island to a strong and independent future.
Yes.
How independent did you mean that to be? Could you define that?
How independent? Well, it's a track I feel the Isle of Man's well on the road to. At the end of the day, I'd like to say probably total independence, and I'd possibly like to see us say it as a Commonwealth member, rather...
We are in the Commonwealth.
We're regarded as a Crown dependency.
Yes, but the Commonwealth is separate. The Commonwealth is what we are part of. We are Crown dependency.
If we are a Commonwealth member, then I feel that's all we need, because from there we could go on and reinstigate the free trade agreement with Europe to trade with.
No, but Commonwealth includes places like Bermuda, Belize, and all these other countries. It's a separate trading area. It's not a trading area.
Because we are regarded by Europe as a Crown dependency, Europe won't speak directly to the Isle of Man on many issues, will they? They have to go through.
We pay a representative in the EU, yeah. So they must speak directly to us.
No, the UK represents us in Europe.
Ah, but we have a spokesperson there, though, don't we?
No, we have an office there.
Yeah.
From what I gather, that we paid somebody that was there.
Yeah, yes, we do. We have an office there, but they do not. They come back to us, so they speak at officer level. It's not political level.
Right.
So that's what I envisage, anyway.
So independence is not out of your range, then. Is abandoning the VAT agreement out of your range?
I think in time, we will have to instigate our own tax system, but hopefully many years down the line, because we're going to have to negotiate that with the UK Customs and have their agreement and their help to see a smooth transition.
Honestly think they'll give us a smooth transition?
Well, I'm hoping they will. Listen, they nearly cut us off. They told us, didn't they, in the last agreement, that
take it or leave it.
Now, there's certain suggestions why they took that attitude with us. We're not going to that now. But if that's their attitude there, surely they want rid, so surely they'll work with us.
One of the things that
over
he has...
Over the next decade, so.
One of the areas he's got is Jersey and Guernsey are very envious about the position of the Isle of Man. They are in a worse position than we are.
They don't have the same manufacturing industry, though, to cope with on this basis.
They don't. They've got a fulfilment industry which is worth millions to them, which is now getting hit because they've already gone back once on them, and they are losing lots of jobs. Even through the hospitals, they are in serious trouble out in Jersey and Guernsey. So I think we have to be real careful. One of the areas is it could take up to 7 years for us to get in a position to do this. And you're looking at customs...
I just said in a decade.
Well, let's just look at another one then, because there's quite a few items I'd like to deal with before the clock beats us to it. And another one from yours, Graham, is that you're talking about pensions. Now we're talking about the basic state pension here,
yes,
in your manifesto. And you say that it is your ambition or plan that it will keep pace with inflation. It's a bit of a tall order, isn't it, as it's a pay-you-go policy?
This is a state pension. And one of the areas that people are actually suffering from is there's an inflation, but they are not getting an inflationary increase, so they're continually falling behind.
But where's the money going to come from?
Well, what we have to do is we actually have to make the savings across government areas, which I've identified in the last 5 years, that there's still a big amount of money that I think that we could save within the government expenditure.
In what ways?
Well,
and where?
Well, what you're looking at is that in the last few years we've spent must be about, I think in 2007 I put a question down regarding consultancy fees, and it was around about 60 odd million for 5 years. We don't need that. Those fees are coming down.
I've said that we should.
At the hospital, you're looking at sending people across who have actually just gone to a hospital appointment in the UK, and they are asked, oh, how are you feeling? Fine, right, you can go home. So there's areas like that we can actually save
money. Do you think that we can save all the money by efficiency savings and everything without losing jobs?
I think we will lose jobs in the area that you can do it through natural wastage. One of the areas you've got to be very careful on is if you make a huge amount of the civil service redundant, you are looking possibly at a £15,000 a year cost to government, because you've got the loss of national insurance, loss of income tax, and you've got the payment of benefits.
Well, if we're paying them £50,000 a year, that's not a bad offset.
No, you're only looking at a certain amount of people. There's a lot of people under £50,000.
I know there is, but that is one area, yes. But there's lots of other areas, and if we get more efficiency, then obviously jobs will go then, because we're more efficient. We don't need the staff to carry them on.
The point being that if we go with natural wastage, retirement, etc. We have to make sure that those positions are not refilled. This is the problem.
But we can't do it in one big hit, because then that will cause more problems in the island.
Because let's face it, we've got a number of years to put all this into place before we're officially banned.
Well, one of the things that Gareth has said in his manifesto is that when it talks about people in government jobs, he says that he believes that if I'm phrasing you correctly, Gareth, that there's far too much money spent, thousands spent on other advisors and consultants.
Yeah.
And you actually say that you think there's enough bright people in government capable of doing these
jobs.
What makes you say that? Well,
it's like there was one in Balsala where they were doing a survey on a river flow and the drainage. They had a company over to from the UK. Now, it's not rocket science to work out the flows and everything else, and there's plenty of people here that probably in the drainage department that should be able to do that job. Why do we always keep getting consultants to do little things like that? They're not big jobs that we need a consultant to do that government could do, and there's a saving in itself. Little things like that. Obviously, you need some consultants for some matters, but we don't need them every time. There is a lot of people on the island that could do it.
But is it possible for government to have all its skills in-house, though?
I don't think all
skills. Needs a second opinion.
No, that's what I said. But not all skills, no. You do sometimes need outside. But at the moment, we seem to get consultants for everything. It's not just for one thing. Why can't we actually make a decision ourselves?
But very often, isn't it?
From within the island.
With the island, English consultants.
I was going to say there's people living here as well, isn't it?
From people living here, Gareth. Yeah.
But, Graham, as you know, one of the reasons why very often senior levels of the civil service encourage members to commission a consultant is because then it makes the senior level of the civil service not accountable.
And I think that's one of the areas that I've tried to address, that when you employ somebody in a senior post who applies for the job and it has a job description, and then all of a sudden you find they've either employed the ex-director to do some of their work, or they've brought in a consultant to do part of it. If they've got that in their job description, they should actually make sure they do those areas. On the savings, what I brought forward is that we should actually have a central maintenance for all of government. That is going to make a significant saving, because you will not need that huge area of...
Centralisation doesn't always do that.
But on maintenance, on a maintenance issue, that what you've got, say in the Department of Education, Department of Education needs a lot of their work doing during school holidays. Department of Infrastructure has a number of staff as well. So you could actually...
Sorry, Grant. The number of managers, I believe it's one in four. Am I right?
I wouldn't know on the one in four. Right. It's across government, you've got to look at it.
This is a problem, I think. When we get down to the bottom of it, there's no... that you've got managers looking at managers.
You have.
And they say, right, that job needs to... who's doing it? They look below them. There's nobody there.
Yes, and that's where, if on the centralised... like, say, take, for instance, Department of Health. They have managers for a number of gardeners. Another department has another manager for two gardeners. Well, if you put them all in the one place, you only need the one manager. And that is actually being brought in now. So I would say that...
So you'd make some of the managers redundant?
If you realise some of the age profiles of the people in these senior positions, they're probably due to go in the next...
But who's to stop the manager or manager in that centralised department?
Because the question that always arises from that, Graham, is whether the funds are last out.
It is.
Not whether they're about to retire in 5 years or not, but whether you can afford them for 5 years.
Because you've got the pensions on top of their wage as well to pay, so...
Well, they've got their... the pension fund is, like you said, not fully funded. And that's an area of concern.
What you're saying about the older ones, it's the younger ones that are going to be with us that maybe aren't the better at the job, that if you get rid of them ones, you're going to drop their wage costs, obviously, and their pension costs.
I think
the older ones,
you've got to deal with the
full pension. You might as well keep them.
This is... do you understand natural wastage? It means that when they get to the retirement...
natural wastage, I'm not thick, right?
When you've got natural wastage, what it means is that when the person retires, you don't fulfil that position.
Yes.
So what you would have is the people... there is younger people in there, in those senior positions, who will be able... not just be in charge of, say, the 12 people that they've got now, but they will be able to be in charge of 15 or 20, because there is a certain area of break-even for the number of people you employ, and Roger will know this, the number of people you employ as a manager before it pays for you to actually manage them.
What you said about centralisation, I think actually localisation of certain areas, such as pavement maintenance and hedge cutting...
Well, that's local authorities again.
Well, yeah, I think it should be that way, because the minute we have a central decision on hedge cutting.
Yes.
And
We were talking originally with Gareth about bright people in government doing the jobs in government instead of consultants, and Gareth gave us his reasons for that. Graham, in your manifesto you also talk about consultants, but you say holding consultants and civil servants accountable, and we were talking about accountability with the others, and progress. And then you talked about the Freedom of Information Act, but you said you did support the Freedom of Information Act in your manifesto 5 years ago.
Yes.
And here we are without it still.
But Graham, you didn't submit anything for the Freedom of Information Act when they asked for it. There was only two MHKs that did.
Well, you don't have to submit everything if you ask for points.
But that's for a public opinion, isn't it? If you'd submitted it, then people would know that you were true to your word on that. It's the public perception.
So you just say, yes, I'm in support of a...
No, you had to submit consultation to show your views and ideas on it. They asked, the government asked for it, and you didn't submit to it.
No, because what you have is, you have a consultation document that's gone out, then it will become a bill which comes forward into Tynwald.
Well, we haven't even got that far. It was a consultation.
No, you have. It was brought to July Tynwald. I don't know why it was brought to July Tynwald, because it actually fell...
Well, of course, we couldn't get through.
Yeah, and I just couldn't...
there wasn't enough time.
Yes, but why bring it in July when you know that it's not going to go through?
So, Graham, why then, if that's the case, and you were aware that happened, I suppose we have to ask the question, is why, if it's in your manifesto, there's 5 years of parliamentary life, somewhere in that period of time, didn't you say, hey, boys, we promised to do this, a lot of did, come on, let's get on with it.
Yeah, it's in at the Council of Ministers. The Council of Ministers were dealing with that policy.
So that's guaranteed to slow it down, isn't it?
It is, and part of the problem is that if somebody's dealing it, now do
so
you
that,
go through
so
the whole...
So that takes us straight back to the start of the talk and the fundamental restructuring of government.
And
the com ministers and...
And I, along with the six other new members who were elected last time, actually came up with an alternate version of the scope and structure of government.
I think we certainly need it.
And it actually reduced the number of departments by one, which would have meant that you would have one less minister.
You're going to ask me how now, and I'll tell you, I haven't got a clue, but we've got to find a way to do it, because it needs to
reduce the numbers on the departments, so there's not that, so they're not really the government. They're sitting as an MHK without any control of departments.
And if you would have reduced it by one, and I hear the Department of Health and Department of Social Care are now saying, oh, yes, we're working wonderfully now separate. Well, surely that was just poor management. If social care was not working properly, then they should have dealt with the management.
Now, I'm going to have to ask you very quickly now, literally for a one-liner, because we're running tight on time. Very quickly, Gareth, why should they elect you?
Because I'm young, I have new ideas, I will chew to my word and will do my best for national and local issues.
Right, and the same question to you, John Hanson.
I feel, I'm sure, I'm the right man to lead our constituency through the very hard times we're about to face. But it's the duty of every voter to turn out on the 29th and vote for change.
And the final voice tonight from Graham Cregeen.
As I committed in 2006 that I would make this my full-time job, that I wouldn't have other directorships, I continue with that commitment. I have a proven record for driving for value and cutting waste. And as a member of your community, I value what we have and will do my utmost for the people of Mulloon Sant and the Isle of Man to protect the way of life.
Well, gentlemen, thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you.
We are Cheers. Right at the end of the programme, however, at the end of this edition in the series of Manx Radio's constituency programmes, in which we featured the three candidates from Mulloon Sant. They were retiring member Graham Cregeen and new contestants Gareth Kelly and John Hanson. Tomorrow, at the same time, Beth Espy will be in Michael, where three are seeking the one seat, and I'll be back next Monday for Middle. If you would like to hear all or part of today's programme, or indeed any of the present series, then they may be found on Manx Radio's special election website. Now, to get to it, you go to manxradio.com, then Election 2011, then Media, and choose Audio, and there you will find a menu of all the programmes. The producers were Mark Tiley and Catherine Nicol. I'm Roger Watterson. Until we next meet, goodbye.